Good evening. If you go to Jeremiah chapter 18, we can get started there tonight. But first, is that my PowerPoint? All right. What's that? That's a silhouette of a lion. Ha ha ha. Technical thing. How do you know that's a lion? The mane, yes. I could have put a lioness up there in a silhouette. You might not have known if it was a lioness or a tiger or even a mountain lion because they look so similar. But you put the mane on there, it's got a very distinct look. And so even with just a silhouette, there's enough information that you can tell what that is easily. What's that? How do you know it's a wolf? Because it's howling. It's in a position that shows us this is what a wolf does. We think about wolves howling. Now, how do you know it's not a coyote? It looks like it's a little more filled out, a little more muscular. Coyotes are not quite as muscular. But there's a lot of similarities between coyotes and wolves. And what's that? Okay, they're all in the dog family. But you can tell by looking at this, that's a dog. What kind of a dog do you think it is? Looks like a German Shepherd. Yes, it does. You're exactly right. Not a wolf, not a coyote, but still a dog family. Lizard. How do you know it's not a dinosaur? Yeah, it has certain features. It's got those long toes and big head. If that was a dinosaur, it probably wouldn't be able to lift that head. Any idea what kind of a lizard? Is it a gecko? Okay, we're going to call it a gecko. What's that? Oh, now, how do you know it's a dragon? You've never seen a dragon, have you? But you know it's a dragon because whatever dragons are, these are the features that a dragon has. He's got that long tail. He's got the horny-looking head and wings. You can't even see all the features, but there's enough there. You look at it, you go, that's a dragon. What's that? Oh, why didn't you say a girl? Because there's enough information in that silhouette that you know it's a girl, but you're beyond the girl thing because you've got something there that identifies her as a princess. And what in the world would that be? Only a princess would have the audacity to wear a hat like that. Got to be a princess. Ooh, what's that? Preacher? Somebody who said preacher? It's a person. It is a person. What's the perspective? Yes, a picture is taken from above. There's enough information in this silhouette that you can look at. Okay, I can identify those as hands. Yeah, those are arms with the hands on you. That's got to be from the top. Very, very interesting. Now, how many of those creatures can you identify? All of them. Yeah, I'm sure. You might not know the exact names of some of them, but you can just look at the picture and you can tell what all those are. I would say that top one's an alligator because it looks more like an alligator than a crocodile. Some kind of a bird, maybe a robin. Looks like a slinky house cat. Actually, that looks like those cats on, what was that Disney movie with the dogs? Yeah, the Siamese cats. Yeah, those mean old Siamese cats that I wanted. Well, we'll just move beyond that. And another dog, elephant, horse. You can see them all. It's interesting. We just look at the silhouette and we can tell what these things are. Thank you. That's good. We can dispense with the PowerPoint there. In Jeremiah 18, God sends Jeremiah down to the potter's house. And all these things that we can identify from their shape, well, it kind of leads into what's going on here. Judah was a mess. They were not faithful to God. They were doing all kinds of evil things. And so they were about to find themselves in a world of hurt when God brought judgment on them. But this is what God does first. chapter 18, verse 1. It says, the word which came to Jeremiah from the Lord, saying, arise and go down to the potter's house, and there I will announce my words to you. And then I went down to the potter's house, and there he was, making something on the wheel. But the vessel that he was making of clay was spoiled in the hand of the potter, so he made it into another vessel, as it pleased the potter to make. When it says the wheel, do you understand what he's talking about? It might have been like a little round table in front of him, and he had some kind of a mechanism that he could usually pump with his foot, is the way it worked. And as he pumped it, it would make that wheel spin, and he would put a lump of clay on top of that wheel as it spun and shape it with his hands as it turned. He was stationary, but the clay was turning, and so he could put his thumbs or his fingers in it and make it shape whatever he wanted to make it shape into. But sometimes there'd be something in the clay, like a rock or a piece of a stick or something that would catch and make a big mess in the clay. And sometimes the clay was just weak in places and it wouldn't hold up where he was shaping it. So that's the kind of thing we're looking at here as we read on in verse 5. The word of the Lord came to me saying, can I not, O house of Israel, deal with you as this potter does, declares the Lord. Behold, like the clay in the potter's hand, so are you in my hand, O house of Israel. At one moment I might speak concerning a nation or concerning a kingdom to uproot, to pull down, or to destroy it. If that nation against which I have spoken turns from its evil, I will relent concerning the calamity I plan to bring on it. Or at another moment I might speak concerning a nation or concerning a kingdom to build up or to plant it. If it does evil in my sight by not obeying my voice, then I will think better of the good which I had promised to bless it. So now then, speak to them, men of Judah, against the inhabitants of Jerusalem, saying, thus says the Lord, behold, I am fashioning calamity against you and devising a plan against you. Oh, turn back each one of you from his evil way and reform your ways and your deeds. But they will say, it's hopeless. For we're going to follow our own plans, and each of us will act according to the stubbornness of his evil heart. Now, of course, God goes on from there, the words that he gave Jeremiah to tell the people of Israel, but the gist of it is this. It's pretty self-explanatory. God is shaping nations, but what's the only way to shape a nation? The only way to shape a nation of people is to shape the individuals in that nation. The only way you can call a nation good is by looking at the people and seeing that the people are themselves good on an individual basis. And the same is true with a nation that's evil. A nation can only be evil if its people are evil. And so God is giving this imagery to Jeremiah to take to the people of Israel. And as he's had it written down, he's given it to us. That God is the one who shapes nations by shaping individuals. And I would ask myself, as you may be asking yourself now, how has God shaped me? How am I different from what I would have been had it not been for the influence of God and for his providence, for his blessings, for his discipline, and for every time that he has moved towards me to shape me in one way or another? It's marvelous to think about, because I know I was, what was the first thing we saw in the silhouettes? A lion. I remember distinctly, I must have been 5 years old, and somebody asked me what I wanted to be when I grew up, and I said, a lion. Because that's the way five-year-olds think. It hadn't entered my mind that, although you can't do that, Marty. I was five, or thereabouts. And so I thought, when I grew up, I'm going to be a lion. What had to happen to me when I grew up? Well, I had to learn things that shaped the way I thought about what I could be. Now, by the time you're 18 or so, you know everything you want to do in life. That's why no college student ever changes their major. Right, yeah. We're constantly being shaped in life if we're paying attention. Now, if you're some hard-headed, stodgy thing, and by the way, you don't have to be old to be hard-headed and stodgy, do you? You don't change much because you don't listen much. We might be afflicted, that's the word, afflicted by our own pride or our own sense of self-righteousness or whatever it might be. We're not going to allow any change to take place. And that's what Israel's problem was. But you're here tonight, which indicates to me, and I believe also to God, you're looking for the possibility of making some positive change in your life. You're looking for the possibility that you're open to God leading you to see something, to understand something that will make a change in you. And I commend you for that. I don't know that we commend, as speakers up here, I don't know if we commend this congregation enough for the good that they are, that you are, and that you do. It's wonderful. Not every congregation has the blessings that we have in the spirit and fervor of the members, but we've got it here. When I think about this passage in Jeremiah 18, it makes me think about a text in the New Testament. It's Romans chapter 12. And it's just the first few verses in Romans chapter 12. Paul has been talking in the last three chapters, 9, 10, and 11. He's been talking about his discouragement, if you will, his heartbreak over the fact that the people of Israel have not turned to Jesus as the Messiah. See, Jeremiah, in his day, Jesus had not yet come. But what God had given them, they'd already turned from that to such a degree that God was going to have to bring the Babylonians against them, and that's exactly what he did. So he sends Jeremiah. You tell him, take this message of the potter and the vessel, and the vessel that the potter's shaping. And if the vessel doesn't shape into what he wants it to make, he'll change it and make something else. And that's what I'm going to do with Israel. They won't obey me. They won't be my people in holiness and righteousness, so I'll send them off into exile. That's what I'll make of them. And then I'll bring them back in 70 years to reestablish the nation. So here we are in the New Testament. And for the greater part, Israel has rejected the Messiah. And so Paul, writing to the church, those who have embraced Jesus as the Messiah, he says this, Romans chapter 12 and verse 1. Therefore I urge you, brethren, by the mercies of God, to present your bodies a living and holy sacrifice, acceptable to God, which is your spiritual service of worship. Now, we'll go on in just a minute to the next verse, but think about what he's saying here. I urge you. You know what an urge is? That's when you're really compelling someone. It's not just, a little suggestion I have for you. No, I'm urging you. This is very important that you do this. I urge you, by the mercies of God. What are the mercies of God? Well, that's when God says, you deserve to be smacked, but I'm not going to smack you. You deserve to be, of course, let me use a big biblical term. You deserve to be smote. I like that word. But I'm not going to smite you, God says. That's mercy when he withholds punishment. By God's mercies, by his willingness to withhold punishment, I want to urge you to present your bodies as what? As a living sacrifice. In other words, you be the lump of clay. You be the lump of clay in the hands of the potter, and you let that potter shape you and mold you. Because he goes on to say this in the second verse. By the way, how does he describe that presentation? That's your reasonable service of worship. If you consider God to be worthy, that's how you'll present yourself. And then he says this in verse 2. Do not be conformed to this world. Do you see the similar imagery of the potter and the clay making it into a vessel? Don't let the world make you into the kind of vessel that the world wants to make you into. But rather, be transformed. Transformed how? By the renewing of your mind. I like that it says renewing instead of changing. Change your mind. No. Not change your mind, renew your mind. My mind isn't new anymore. And sometimes I do things and my body's not cooperating either. You know how that works. Talking about that. Last night I came in and I was tired. And yesterday morning, got an early start, and so I thought, I'm going to be driving across town. I'm going to want coffee. So I made some coffee, and I put it in one of those really neat Yeti cups. And then as I was leaving with the cup in my hand, I got something I need to go get in the bedroom before. So I went in the bedroom, and, of course, I didn't want to do what I was going to do with the coffee in my hand, so I set the coffee on the dresser right next to Debbie's dolls. I know. You can see it coming, can't you? Just wait a minute. Wait a minute. Let me finish the story. She's got some really nice dolls that a friend of hers sent her from the Czech Republic, and they're beautiful. You know, I just realized I hadn't told Debbie about this. She's probably watching right now. Because she wasn't feeling good this afternoon, so she stayed home. Anyway, I love you, darling. See, all this started because I was talking about getting older and not being as adept at movement anymore and thinking. So, of course, what I did when I set that coffee down there, I completely forgot about the coffee. I got whatever I needed, headed out the door. I'm going across town and think, I need my coffee. Where's my coffee? Oh, it's on the dresser. So I get back late last night. I go in the bedroom. I want coffee. I've already got coffee made. So in passing, I just reach out for the coffee. And, of course, my hand doesn't do what my hand used to do so well. I just grasp around the cup and pick it up. My hand pushes the cup over, and the coffee splashes out on one of those dolls. Yeah, I know. Uh-oh. That's what I said. Anyway, I picked up the doll immediately. I took it to the sink, rinsed it off with cold water, and looked at it and said, I think that's going to be all right. And then I set it down in the floor of the shower and got a little fan and put on it so it would dry. I know, it's hilarious, but this is what happens to us, right? We get a little older. Oh, what am I doing? What's this all about? This is because things are supposed to be a certain way and they're not that way. And so I'm trying to make corrections and get it back to the way it's supposed to be. Isn't that the story of our lives every day? We're trying to get things back to the way they're supposed to be. Back to the Garden of Eden. Back to fellowship with God. And God says, that's what I want with you. I want to shape you and mold you into something good that you can't even imagine. I don't want you to be conformed to this world. I want you to be transformed by the renewing of your minds. And here's my son, so you can see how he lived and what he taught. And here's a book. I've got it all written down in black and white so you can read this. And then you read this. And do this, your mind will transform, your thinking will transform. You'll be closer to what you're supposed to be than you ever could without this. And that's what God is teaching us to do. But he says something interesting in chapter 12 and verse 2. It says, do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind so that, some of you may remember that I've said, whenever you see those two words together, pay attention. Because he's given you a purpose statement. Be transformed by the renewing of your mind so that you can do something. So that you can do what in this case? So that you can prove what the will of God is. That which is good and acceptable and perfect. So that you can prove what the will of God is. How do you do that? The Greek word, I'm sure you're dying to hear what the Greek word is. Dokimazo, which doesn't really mean anything unless you put it in context. When you go back to Luke chapter 12, this is where Jesus uses that same word. It says in verse 54, Luke 12, 54, he was also saying to the crowds, when you see a cloud rising in the west, immediately you say a shower's coming, and so it turns out. And when you see a south wind blowing, you say it will be a hot day, and it turns out that way. You hypocrites, you know how to analyze the appearance of the earth and sky, But why do you not analyze this present time? In English, the word analyze is the word dokimazo. Same word from Romans 12, interchangeable. So what's he talking about here in Luke 12? He's talking about we look at something and we inspect it, we analyze it, we make a judgment about it. Oh, we see there's a south wind blowing. It's going to be a hot day. That's the idea. So when Paul is writing to the church at Rome and he gets to chapter 12 and verse 2 and he says, proving what the will of God is, he's talking about you analyze what the book says. You think about it. And you make a determination what you're supposed to do and then you do that. Because it's the will of God that we do righteousness. We do holiness. Christianity is not a religion of, well, you don't cuss, you don't drink, you don't smoke. It's not about not doing stuff. Christianity is about living like Jesus lived. It's about the fruit of the Spirit. It's about the good that can be accomplished in my life that bleeds over, doesn't bleed over. That's not a bad imagery to use because we're talking about being cleansed by the blood, just like we were talking about this morning. But it flows out of us, just like Jesus was talking about the waters of life springing up. Remember that woman at the well? Right there at Jacob's well. But he's talking about water that's not H2O. He's talking about water that's so much better than that. So much longer lasting, so much more refreshing. And that's what all of this is about. Now, it's not just here in Luke 12. If you go a little farther, chapter 14. And I forgot to note the verse. But there's a guy here that's going to take some oxen out and try his oxen. Where is that? Oh, yeah. Chapter 14, verse 16. Man was given a big dinner and he invited many at the dinner hour. He sent his slaves out to those who had been invited. Come, everything's ready now. But they're all like began to make excuses. First one said, I bought a piece of land. I got to go look at it. Please consider me excused. By the way, have you ever bought a piece of land without going to look at it? It seems kind of silly. Another said, I bought 5 yoke of oxen and I'm going to try them out. Please consider me excused. Now that phrase, try them out, that's dokimazo. That's the same word from Romans 12 too. What do you do when you try out oxen? Well, you put them in a harness, but get the yoke on them. You get a plow behind them or a cart or something, and you make them go. And you figure out, are these oxen going to be good to do what I got them to do? And that's what Paul has been inspired by the Holy Spirit to write to the church about proving what the will of God is. Analyze it. Look at it. Do it. And this is interesting too. In John chapter 7, verse 17, this is one of those standalone verses. It's always important to know a context, but in this case, if you don't even know the context, this one verse will get it. Jesus said in John 7, 17, if anyone's willing to do his will, he will know of the teachings, whether it's of God or whether I speak from myself. Think about that. If anyone is willing to do his will, he will know of the teaching, whether it is of God or whether I speak from myself. What's he saying? He's saying, you want to know whether or not this teaching's from God, just do it. You do it, you're going to find out in the doing of it, oh yeah, this is from God. This is from God. And so when Paul writes to the church at Rome and says, don't be conformed to this world. Don't be shaped like the vessel the world wants you to be. Be transformed by the renewing of your mind. Presenting your bodies as holy sacrifices. That's your reasonable service of worship. And this is how you prove what's good. You present yourselves to God and you do what he says to do and you find out this is the way to do it. And after years of experience, you find out, oh yeah, this is right. And when I say years of experience, it doesn't have to be years of experience in doing the right thing. How many times have you talked to somebody who's got years of experience in doing the wrong thing, and they will let you know, oh yeah, don't do that. I remember as a very young man, before smoking was, greatly unpopularized, a lot of people smoked. And I would talk to them about it. And you know, to a person, they all said, don't start this. don't smoke. I never met anybody who smoked that said, you know, you ought to take up smoking, Marty. Do you good. Isn't that interesting? And I've known a lot of smokers in my life, back in the time when it wasn't so bad socially to smoke. You watch the old TV shows, they're all smoking. Lucille Ball, Desi Arnaz, they smoked. I remember commercials. I bought a couple CDs of old radio shows. And I don't know if you've ever listened to the old radio shows, but they had commercials that would go on for 5 minutes. And one of those commercials was about cigarettes. And it was, I mean, one commercial. Today, you know, it goes on for 5 minutes, but it's several different commercials. It goes on for 10 or 15 minutes. But for the cigarettes, I forget what the brand was, but it was the three T's. Remember the three T's: taste, tongue, and throat. Because it's good to your taste, it's good for your tongue, and it's good for your throat. That was a commercial back in the day. Things have changed, haven't they? Through use, people figured out, oh, that's not true. And I figured out, being the genius that I am, if I'm more careful about what I eat today, I will feel better tomorrow. Now, that is a physical truth regarding food and water, but it's a spiritual truth regarding everything that's in this book. It's a spiritual truth regarding everything we have ever seen in Jesus. If you allow what you know about Jesus to shape the way you think and to shape the way you behave, it's going to change you into a vessel that's a dandy vessel. And it'll be to your benefit. It'll be to the benefit of your family. It'll be to the benefit of your coworkers. It'll be to the benefit of anybody and everybody who knows you. And remember, this started out being a lesson about God bringing judgment on Judah because they were an evil nation. But the only way you can have an evil nation is to have an evil people. And the only way you can have a righteous nation is to have a righteous people. And the only way that happens is if an individual decides, I'm going to refuse to be conformed to this world. I'm going to give myself to the Lord and be transformed by the renewing of my mind. I'm going to make the effort. I'm going to make the sacrifice. That's what's going to happen, if it's going to happen at all. And so that's the lesson for tonight. I hope it's been one that's kind of sunk in. These are things that I hold in great value because they mean a great deal to me on a practical level. And I hope you see the practicality of all of this. When Johnny leads us in the song, you know, this Sunday night crowd, we know what the invitation song's all about. But if there is somebody here who's been thinking about obeying the gospel, or if you need the prayers of the church, don't worry, because it's a Sunday night. Your turning to the Lord tonight is just as valuable as it would be any other time. Amen? So let's stand and sing the invitation song.